Melissa, Mike, Cal, the show. It's 102.5 The Bone. Please go get Gerald Springer and bring him in the studio. Jerry Springer is going to be out and about today. We'll have an opportunity to meet him if you'd like. Talk. I think he's... Is he talking about his new TV show? Nobody gave me information.
Oh, no?
Let me look at Jerry Springer. Look at him. Look at him. There's a television icon right there.
I must have been paying your rent.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good over
Somebody
here.
Somebody is.
How are you, sir?
I am fine. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. I said this before, and I'm going to, before you got here, I said when he comes in, it's going to be kind of weird to look at him because we're used to looking at you on TV for all these years. Like, now when you're here, you're human and you're in front of me, but for these years, I already have this iconic image of what you look like.
Yeah, and it's pretty depressing.
Yeah. Do you think part of your charm is being as self-deprecating as you are?
Well, I have reason to be self-deprecating. There's a lot of material there that I can be humble about.
We had you on the phone one time.
Yes.
This is probably like 8 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And I said to you, Jerry, how long will you do your show? And you go, oh, God, I hope not much longer.
Yeah.
What a great response.
Yeah, it's been, I guess, 27, 28 years, but I've let...
That's a Carson run.
Yeah. Well, I said I am going to be retiring when I'm 104.
Right.
So so that's it, though. When I'm 104, I...
That's it. You're done. Well, run this down. You're in politics first in Cincinnati, correct?
Yeah. I started out as a lawyer, but I was working for Bobby Kennedy, and then I...
What did you do for the Kennedy? Did you work for a campaign
campaign? And then...
how old are you at the time?
24.
So you're gung-ho. It's that changing time.
Long hair, the whole bit.
Yeah.
I was at the time an anti-war protester, and I was active in the civil rights movement.
Uh-huh.
So that's what got me into politics. Anyway, so I did that, and then when he died, I took the Ohio bar, and I started practicing law in Ohio, but I was still active politically, and so I was elected to the city council for 10 years, and then I was mayor of Cincinnati.
Right. What a weird city.
Yeah.
What a weird city, because I tell you right now, in all the places I've been, it's the worst. I mean, everything shuts down at like 9 o'clock at night. I had to go to Kentucky to get something to eat after 11 o'clock.
Yeah, not anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not anymore. It's... If in the over the Rhine area and the downtown area,
yeah.
Now it's
built up.
Yeah,
but
it's a cool place.
Also, their anti pornography.
Oh, that's 1970s.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Like it had a run.
It had a very conservative history,
which I would imagine you were there at that time, right?
Yeah, I was the aberration because I was like the first Democratic mayor,
right?
Up to then, it had been really very conservative, and the city was conservative. I think people voted for me just because they wanted to be able to keep their eye on me,
yeah.
So they'd know where I was. They used to run a crawl on the 11 o'clock news. It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your mayor is?
Did when Bobby Kennedy was killed?
Yeah.
Were you like?
Yeah, that was it. Because I was in college when John Kennedy was assassinated.
Right.
And
the back-to-back, I don't know, I mean, we had our 9-11, but if we had two 9-11s and, you know, within a short amount of time, I don't know if we can handle that.
It was staggering. It really was. It was like, and just 2 months earlier, they had killed Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, when people say these are difficult times now, and they are.
Yeah.
But compared to 1968... When our cities were burning,
yeah.
Our brothers and sons and fathers were dying in Vietnam, and, you know, we had the assassinations of Med Gabbers, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy. We wind up the riots in Chicago, then we wind up electing Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
So it was like, wow, that was a capsule of all the difficult things that happened in the mid-century.
Did you feel like I look at it now, I was born in 71, I look back at it now, yeah. And I go, clearly the government was picking these people off. Like, I definitely believe Bobby Kennedy, Sirhan still claims he has no knowledge of killing Bobby Kennedy. Like, he's almost like a Manchurian effect. I just always assume that that's a government thing.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I
mean, had all these rabble rousers, these people are disturbing the system. You got, you know, Bobby, I mean, JFK was bad enough. Bobby getting in there would have been, you know, taking on the mob. Like, it's all these enemies, and it just seems to be a bit easier to get rid of them.
But you never do. In other words, it's great for a movie, but in real life, you know, knocking off one person doesn't mean that we won't continue to do whatever we're doing.
Right.
So, no, I think this was a deranged guy who was upset about the Middle East, and that's why he killed Bobby Kennedy. I don't think it's any... We all want conspiracy theories because it makes us... It gives structure to our lives. There's an explanation. We can't live with the idea that there's just wackos out there that do horrible things. We have to always think there's this great plot.
And not always. There's sometimes I look at things and it just seems like one day we're going to go, isn't that obvious? But I watched a documentary the other night on flat earthers. Those people are just insane. I mean, there's astronauts laughing at them. Like, we've been out there, and then nobody has a real reason of why are they lying to us? Like, if you want to lie about killing a president because you don't want to know the government killed a president, why would we lie if the earth was flat? We'd just tell you, yeah, it's flat. Don't fall. Be careful.
So you're in
Cincinnati, mayor. You leave office, and then when do you get into TV?
Well, virtually the very next day, I was hired by, they had spoken to me earlier, the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati, if I would anchor their news.
Right.
And I wanted to do political commentary, but they wanted me to anchor. So we worked out a deal where I would do the news every night at 5:30, 6, and 11. But at the end of every newscast, I could do a 1 minute or 2 minute commentary.
Oh, which is very rare for television.
It really was. But back then, you had editorials or commentary, but it was always done by the station manager.
Yeah, I remember seeing that as a kid.
Yeah, but to have a news anchor do it, that was revolution or whatever.
Was it because you would no longer deliver news impartially?
Yeah, they had there was a good reason why that didn't happen. But that was the deal that was worked out. And I really worked hard at keeping the news separate from my personal view, which I saved for my commentary. Segment, so if I was talking about Ronald Reagan, for example, I wasn't raising my eyebrows like, whoa. So I worked, to...
Read the script and keep going.
And did you call that your final thought? Was that where that came from originally?
That's where... I didn't call it the final. It was just called commentary.
Okay.
Gary's commentary. But then when 10 years later they gave me the talk show, they wanted to continue that because it had been pretty popular in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And so that's where the final thought came. That's why I add that to the end of the show, because there's so much chaos in my show that, and I let everyone else say what they want and do what they want during the show. But at the end, I just want to, at least for a minute, make clear where I stand on it.
Right,
Just, I'm not endorsing what you just saw, but here's my view of how that might be dealt with.
So when they bring you the idea of doing the talk show, like the TV,
I was assigned to it. Oh yeah, Phil Donahue, the company that owned the station where I did the news, also owned Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael. They owned talk shows,
so they knew
Phil was retiring, and we were pretty dominant in the ratings. So the CEO of the company came to me and said, "Phil's retiring. We're starting another talk show. You're going to host it." So I was assigned to it as an employee, and they adjusted the salary and all that. But so I started.
Did you like
doing
that better?
That. No.
Like the idea of it?
No, I said I want to still do the news. I said, well, you can do both.
Oh.
So I would get up in the morning, fly to Chicago, do the talk show, and in the afternoon fly back to Cincinnati five days a week.
How long did you do that?
2 years. And then I said, I can't do that anymore. And so I figured, well, I'd done the news for 10 years. Let's now concentrate
on the talk
show. Are
you private jetting back and forth?
No, it was United Airlines.
So you had to actually go through security.
Well, back then, this was pre-night.
It's a pain in the ass to get on a flight.
Yeah, but they paid me handsome. Look, it's a great life.
I
will never complain with what I gotten to do. So, so I did that. But then it was wearing me out. And so I decided to just concentrate on the talk show. And then the show took off, and
Start out like Donahue, a serious?
Yes, it was serious. I remember having Oliver North on, Jesse Jackson, and there was a lot of political stuff.
Right.
But at the time, there were 20 talk shows on the air, and this was early 90s.
I'm trying to think of all.
You won't even remember
Jenny
some of
Jones,
the names.
Jones,
Ricky Lake,
yes,
Gordon, somebody.
Yeah, right.
There was a fat English dude named Gordon.
Yeah. Tempest Bledsoe wound up having one later on.
After a while, they gave everybody a show.
Yeah, there were 20 talk shows, and every one of them, including mine, we all wanted to be like Oprah. Yeah. And then along came Ricky Lake, and hers was the first talk show to go after the kids. And when I say kids, I mean high school and college.
Younger demo, yeah.
So I just thought, as a business model, why are we trying to be one out of 20 going after Oprah? Let's be one out of two and go after Ricky's audience,
right,
where we get a much larger piece of the pie. So the very next day, literally, was a one-day decision. From then on, we said only young people in the audience, young people on stage, young subject matter. Well, as you know, young people are much more open and wilder in their lifestyles.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, the show went crazy. Not every day, but every once in a while.
Do you recall the first one that we had Oliver North on last week, and now we got lesbian mother couples dating something?
Well, what I remember is the first fight. And we had no security, because whoever thought of having security?
Yeah.
And it was on, the fight was about, we had the Klan on, and...
white supremacist and black
yes.
folks? Did,
and
this
people
before
charged
Geraldo?
From the... no, this was after Geraldo.
Okay.
This was about 94. And people ran up from the audience... and literally a riot broke out.
Right.
And the very next day, we got security. I honestly thought that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
You can't have a fight on national television, whatever. Then Universal bought us.
And when for syndication.
Yeah, and when Universal bought us, they said, from now on, you can only do crazy.
Yeah.
They're like, we discovered we got a gold right here.
And that's it. That's how the show became. So now if you call us with a warm, uplifting story, we're not allowed to run it.
Right.
And the producers are given a list of other shows based on the subject matter, which show you send it to. But we're not allowed to run it. We have to always have something that's crazy.
And who is picking that? Like, were you involved in that?
No, I'm not allowed to know what the show's about.
Oh, really?
So I carry a card. But all the card has on it are the names of the guests. And then my job is to ask questions that you would ask sitting at home watching and then make jokes.
Yeah.
But I'm never allowed to know the subject matter, which makes it more spontaneous, more authentic.
That would be my dream job, I think.
It's great. So you get it up there, but, you know... I remember the one show I often talk about is the guy who married his horse.
Yeah.
but they didn't. They don't tell me what's come. Okay. So here's what happened. This is the backstory. I'm out there, and the show started. That's why every segment I always open with, so what's going on?
Right,
So I said, here's Bob. Bob, what's going on? Bob is, I don't know if his name was Bob. I forget. But anyway.
So you don't know. Bob's going to come out, and he's going to tell you why he's there.
He's sitting in the chair
this
on stage.
Great.
And I'm saying, Bob, what's going on? He says, well, I'm having trouble with the neighbors.
Right. Oh,
okay, what's the problem? He says, I don't know. They don't like my wife. Well, what's wrong with your wife? Nothing. She keeps to herself. She doesn't argue with them. She's not loud. Well, I'm thinking, you would, this is kind of boring.
Right.
So I look at my card. The next guest is Pixel. Okay, well, let's meet your wife, Pixel. And how comes this horse? Now, if I hadn't told you what the name of the show was, if a horse comes out with no one on it, you think the wife has fallen off the horse. So I say, stop the cameras. Oh, my God, she's falling off the horse. Can somebody find out what's going on? The producer on stage is yelling at me. He says, no, that's his wife.
Oh, my God. How great is that?
Yeah.
It's so good.
Did you
get to a point where you stopped questioning? Like, I'm sure first, like, three times you're like, okay, they got to be making fun of me now. They're bringing out a horse as this guy's wife. Did you get to a point where you go, yeah, this is it. This is the show.
Apparently the people on the show had sent the camera people there to his home. It was outside Branson, Missouri, about 20 miles out. And the hallways in his home were extra wide, so the horse could go up. I mean, the horse lived with him.
Oh, my God.
But we did a follow-up show.
Did he make love to the horse?
Well, that's so personal.
I can't believe you shriek your responsibilities as a host didn't ask that question.
No, I did. I say, I think of the way I phrased it. Are you guys affectionate?
Uh-huh.
And
that's
what's
nice.
Weird, and he said... What was interesting is every time I stood between Bob, who's sitting down in the chair, and the horse, who is off to my side, if I was in their line of sight, the horse would nudge me out of the way.
Oh,
so there really was
a connection.
Yeah.
Now, wow. Was the guy blind? Is that why he's wearing those glasses?
Carmen's showing the behind your foot.
Oh, you have the video there. Yeah, over, so the you other, know oh, I'm you telling the truth. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, that's Pixel.
Yeah, that's him.
I was just wondering if he was blind because he had these big glasses on. So, like.
No, he probably thought no one would recognize
him. Yeah, trying to hide his identity. Holy.
No one will know me now.
So, at ratings wise,
yeah,
how close do you get to, you know, you got of the 20, they start dropping off. You got Donahue's out, Jesse Raphael is out, Fat Gordon's out. Like, you're down to only a couple of shows now. Yours is how are you doing?
That was just the longest running in history,
right? I mean, like, yeah. Like,
well, who, Phil went 29 years.
Phil Donahue had a good show.
He was phenomenal.
It was boring, though. I remember as a kid, I would not watch.
Well, because it wasn't for kids,
right? But then every once in a while, he would have transvestites, and he was something that was so taboo in the '80s. You know?
Well, but the one thing the talk shows have done, including ours, is that we opened up, at least on television, America to the whole of America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until our show, or about that time, all American television was upper middle class white, all
right,
of it.
Right.
And if you were an African American, for example, you were on one of the side networks. If you, unless you were a doctor living in the suburbs like Cosby,
right.
But everything else, you didn't get that. It was always upper middle. Whether it was Friends, Frasier, Seinfeld, it's always these well scrubbed,
yeah,
white looking guys living in nice neighborhoods, etc. And then along came our show, and we saw a slice of America that is different than that model.
Yeah.
And it's even though the purpose of the show was entertainment, and that's all it ever was, a consequence of the show is that people started to see on television what they see on the streets every day.
Yeah.
I mean, no grown-up could watch our show and honestly believe they had never read about that or didn't know that existed or didn't have someone in their family that had a similar story,
right,
or that crazy uncle we have. I always say, which I mean, I have never met a human being who couldn't have been on our show. I'm not saying Scandal.
No, you're fine.
But there's in everyone's life or in everyone's family, there's something that happened that's a little bit embarrassing, a little bit different, a little bit whatever. So this business about, well, I'm glad I'm not them. Oh, get over yourself. You know.
I love the Springer show. I don't like Steve's show. And I'm not asking. Yeah. I'm not dogging it. It's for me. It's personal taste. It annoys me on a level that Dr. Phil annoys me. My wife watches it all the time,
yeah,
and I can't stand to hear the voice. And I like Steve. He's been on the show. He's a nice guy. I've hung out with him. But it's just, does that blow your mind that the former security guard for your show now has a long-running talk show?
No, we produce it.
Right.
Yeah. And no, he's a good friend, and but, I mean, I wanted him to have a show.
But you didn't in the beginning. You were like, so we didn't have security. Now we have security. Now security has his own show, and it's successful.
Oh, we pushed it, yeah. Well, just like Oprah begat Dr. Phil,
mm-hmm,
I begat Steve.
Right, right.
And it was a painful birth. Next time I'm going to adopt.
He's
a good friend.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
His wife, by the way, he met his wife on our show.
Oh, really?
Because Rochelle was a producer on our show and became our executive producer. So she really was running my show. And then when we said Steve should have a show,
She went
with him, which is obviously a good thing.
Dr. Phil, I don't think is a bad, he has a lot of success, but the way he talks and drives me nuts, at condescending, I'm telling you, and I hear Steve yelling at his guests sometimes, and I just walk by my bedroom, my hands on my ears, it just annoys the hell out of me. But people love that, and they love the fact that he's, like, he's the tough guy in the room. They love that he's pointing and telling people what to do. And
no one has ever said that I'm the tough guy in the room. I am the hero of wimps of America. Yeah.
How about, though, you find you're in a competition with 20 other hosts. You find your niche. You had yours. How about Maury? Maury's like, I'm going to try and do a real talk show. And then he's like, forget it. We'll just do paternity and opposite couples. Fat guy marries skinny woman. Tall guy marries short woman. That was all. That's all Maury's done. You find what works and you stick with it.
Well, I think that's true of anything that's on television.
Yeah.
You find a niche, whether it's a serious show, whether it's a drama, you know, look at all those detective stories.
Yeah.
Or remember when I was a kid, Columbo.
Yeah.
You know, there was a niche. Columbo was always in the, you know, in the rumpled jacket and didn't look like he knew what he was doing. Rumpled raincoat, didn't know what he was doing. And then at the he'd turn around just as he's walking out the door and say,
one more question.
Yeah.
You know what reminds me of Columbo?
Everyone finds a niche, and if it works, that's what you stick with.
Joe in our TV room reminds me of Columbo, except he never has the smart part. He's just always rumpled is what he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jerry Springer is here with us. You have an opportunity to meet Jerry today. They have a CW 44 meet and greet. It's going to be happening on West Spruce Street from 11 to 1, 4202 West Spruce Street. You can go by and meet Jerry Springer, an icon of television. I mean, do you realize that? Or are you?
I'm a schlub that got lucky. I mean, let's be honest.
However, schlubs don't last for that luck. Only lasts a
short
time.
I'm a long-lasting schlub.
Long-lasting schlub.
That's what it's going to say on my tombstone. Jerry Springer, long last. But he didn't last too long, otherwise he wouldn't be here.
We had
my gravestone.
We had Arsenio on the other day.
Yes, he's a great guy.
You're right. Really hasn't done a whole heck of a lot lately, but Arsenio is one of those, also one of those folks that's an icon of television.
Sure.
He did stuff before anybody else did it, and that's kind of...
And he had to break barriers. Much tougher than me. I mean, I didn't have it tough at all. You know, I hats off to him. It's an incredibly tough business that resists, you know, until very recently. And maybe there's even still resistance. But certainly when he was breaking through, resistance to people of color, particularly late night. And
what he was edgy, going against.
And edgy, right.
Right.
Going against middle America, or at least the image of what we have of middle America. You know, hats off to those people that are pioneers. So I will always have great respect for him.
You mentioned before about how television only showed white people and black people in certain lights. I always tell people now, the two things that make me realize and understand racism a little bit are Muhammad Ali's career. Muhammad Ali's life,
yeah.
I believe Muhammad Ali's greatest contribution to society is teaching white people what racism really is.
Yeah.
The fact that he can represent us in the Olympics and then come back here and we wouldn't even let him go use the water fountain.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other thing is that I watched this viral video of Mr. Rogers talking to Congress, asking them for funding for PBS.
Yeah.
There is not a prominent black man anywhere to be found in that entire room. It is all old white dudes. Yeah. And I thought that was what it was like. Everywhere for black people.
Yeah.
And that's why you'll never understand it unless you were black. And so when you talk about Arsenio took it into the, you know, took it light years forward.
Well, we can go even till yesterday's headlines last night with the judge's decision on Manafort.
Yeah.
You know, without getting into the whole argument about what kind of guy he was and Trump and all that, the fact of the matter is the crime that he was found guilty to, the sentence that was suggested, you know, that
right.
people with those crimes should get, the fact that he got only 4 years for basically stealing from the American people and what he did with Russia, whatever it was. And our prisons are filled with African Americans, for example, who are in for 5-6 years, let's say, on a drug-related crime.
A minor drug-related.
Yeah, two joints.
Yeah. And this guy, who's done it over a 10-year period, at least, and was helping the Russians against Ukraine, and he gets 4 years. We really do have a separate system of justice for whites and African Americans.
But also that's for rich is what that is.
Oh, yeah, rich.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
Yeah. Rich white people. You know, the line yesterday by AOC, the new congresswoman from Bronx, New York, when she tweeted, justice isn't blind, it's bought.
No matter who
a powerful line.
But no matter who you believe in, that's always been obvious. You always know that.
Yeah.
Like everybody's gives Trump a hard time because he had a deferment to go to Vietnam. All the rich kids got deferment to Vietnam. That was how it was. That's how it always is. I always say my Uncle Louie paid so my cousin Ciro didn't have to go. That's how it went.
Yeah.
Jerry Springer is here. Final thought, Jerry. What do you hate more, when people give you final thoughts or when people just start chanting Jerry? Does that kind of drive you crazy now?
Well, the Jerry thing is, the two things I'll say about Jerry. First, My wife now says they should start chanting your address so you know how to get home.
How long have you been married?
I'm 78, 45 years.
Oh, my. Oh, yeah. She still likes you?
Oh, she has no taste.
real quick to the Jerry chanting thing.
No, she's...
This shows you how popular and how big you are. So I saw Jerry Seinfeld popped up at Gotham or something, wasn't on the bill, showed up. The crowd started chanting, Jerry, Jerry.
Yeah.
I mean, that comes straight from your show. I mean, that's got to make you feel like Jerry Seinfeld, very popular, but they're not saying Seinfeld.
Yeah.
They're going boop, doop, boop, boop, boop. They're chanting Jerry.
Yeah. It'd be hard to get the whole crowd.
One other Jerry story. The one place that I found it difficult is, you know, I'm at a football game. I think it was in Cincinnati. And you know the big stadiums that when you go to the men's room, there's like 30 yards long of a urinal. And there are 500 guys in there waiting to go.
Yeah.
So I get spotted. I go up to the urinal, and I got 500 guys behind me going, Jerry, Jerry. And at my age, I've got enough pressure. Quit chanting my name. I'll be right with you guys, all right? Oh, man, it's no fun going to the bathroom when you got people chanting Jerry, Jerry.
Sure. One time I saw, what's his name, Norm from Cheers.
George Wendt.
George Wendt was at a hockey game, and they were scooping around on this thing, and then they found him in the crowd, and they zoomed in, and the whole stadium, Norm, Norm.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go, you got to deal with that.
Yeah, but people are always nice. And I mean, as controversial as the show has been, it's amazing in person. Everybody is nice.
Yeah.
I can't, if you tell me, has there ever been a moment when someone came up to you in person?
It was rude.
No.
No, that's good.
No, no. You know, obviously, if they don't like you, first of all, if they don't like you, they don't want you.
Yeah.
And so it's not that. It's not like being in politics. In politics, people let you know.
Oh, sure.
When you're in show business, there's no negative to it. People are only nice to you. And as long as you can recognize that you are not defined by your show. You're a human being. Am I a good husband? Am I a good father? Am I a good grandfather? That kind of thing. Not the Jerry. It's nice. It's nice, but I don't go to sleep and I think, boy, I must be wonderful. People change my name. You know.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, I always go to this. Remember MASH?
Yeah.
Klinger always wanted to go home. He dressed like a girl all the time. Yeah. And then he ends up staying because he meets a girl that he likes.
Yeah.
You all this time working in politics, then you get into the news, then you get into this stupid show, and it becomes so super successful. Are you like, look what I've done? Or are you like, I can't believe what I've done? Like, at night, you have great success, but are you happy with it? Are you like, it didn't turn out how
because,
I wanted it to? But
because I never quit politics. I spend an awful lot of time every single week doing political stuff.
Like what?
Raising money, giving speeches. I travel the country. Yeah. You know, I'm liberal, and so my politics goes that route. And I'm very, very active in the with the party and et cetera. So I do that, and then I do a weekly podcast. You just Google Jerry Springer podcast. I've done it for 4 years.
It's a political podcast, or is it?
It's a little of every. It is 10 minutes of comedy, 10 minutes of a political rant, and 10 minutes of folk or bluegrass music. Because we do it at a coffee shop, a folk music coffee shop in Ludlow, Kentucky.
Oh, wow.
We right outside of Cincinnati, across the river there. And it's a live audience, and I do it with my best friend for 45 years. Our wives are best friends. Our kids grew up together. And he and I sit there and joke, just like we're joking around here.
Yeah.
So we BS for 10 minutes. Then I do my political rant. And then we get folk groups from around the country that come to Ludlow to be on the podcast. And they do 10 minutes of live music. And I've done it now for 4 years every week.
Oh,
so
that's great.
So that gives me a political. Sarasota is home,
you
right do down
live,
the road.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So what, do you travel to Kentucky every week?
Yeah. And then I travel to Connecticut to do the show. And then we have a place in Chicago because that's where our daughter and grandson.
How many shows do you do? Like, do you do them every one a day, or you do bang them out a bunch?
We bang them out a bunch. Yeah. Now I'm starting a new show.
Right. I didn't know if we could talk about that or not. No,
it's America.
Yeah. Well, originally they asked me not to mention it until a certain time, so I didn't want to blow the cover. Yeah.
Yeah. In the fall, I'll be doing a show, and it's called Judge Jerry.
Now, will this be like the other Judge shows, or a little bit more Jerry?
Well, it'll be my personality, so I'm sure there'll be quips during the show. But all these Judge shows, which I'm learning now, have legal validity.
Yeah.
So therefore, I mean, I'm a lawyer, and you know, I had to go over my books again, but the decision that I make
is final.
Is final. Yeah. They can't go to a court of common pleas and appeal it.
Right.
So people are coming with their real lawsuits, and I have to be serious about that. So my decisions will hopefully be just and fair. But you know, it's impossible for me not to make a quip here and there, right, just because that's what I'm comfortable doing.
I wanted to ask you that, not to put you on the spot, but with the quips, what can you remember? One of your favorites from Jerry Springer? Because I love that whenever this is happening, all this chaos, it dies down, and then you give him a shot, and the crowd just goes nuts. Is there one that you think of that you're like, yeah, that was pretty good?
Well, I'm spouting off all the time. Oh, I know one. We had this young woman. I think she was a stripper. You know, on our stage, on the corner there, we have a pole.
Pole, yeah.
So I said, would you dance on the pole? And she said, I'd rather not. I said, well, will you dance on a Czechoslovakian?
No, she had no
which,
idea.
Of course, after I said it, even though people laughed, I realized it made no sense because there's no Czechoslovakia anymore. There's
right.
the Czech Republic.
Right.
But, so, you know.
Oh, you blew her mind.
Yeah.
She didn't know the joke in the first place.
Yeah. But then who's going to dance on a Republican?
So. Yeah. I like the Jerry Springer movie.
Yeah.
Oh, Ringmaster.
Yeah. I mean, that seemed like.
That's 21 years old.
Well, nice and silly and funny. And,
oh, yeah.
You know,
it was fun to make.
Yeah. It was one of those, you're like, oh, a movie. And then you watch it, you're like, oh, it was way better than I thought it was going to be. Still haven't seen MacGruber, though, but I've seen it already.
Yeah. Yeah. How dare you?
All right. Well, Judge Jerry is going to be coming out. You've got the Jerry Springer Show weekdays on CW 44 from 2 to 4 p.m.
Right. Yeah. They run it 2 hours in a row.
Yeah. Well, this is Florida. This is where most of these people come from.
Yeah.
You know how many people over the years I've met that have been on the show?
Well, let me tell you why that happens. Think about it. We've done this show for 27 years, figure 200 shows a year. That's over 5,000 shows.
Jeez.
Each show you watch has at least 10 people on it,
right?
Two or three stories, four or five people. I mean, at least 10 people on the shows. So you do 5,000 times 10 people, that's 50,000 people
Damn.
Have been on the show. So when you walk down any street in America, the odds are that you're going to bump into someone
Damn, right.
who at least in their family was on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Now bring that to Florida.
Yeah.
No,
you don't have to bring them. They live here.
Yeah, it's quite, I mean, we really breed them here.
I love your Yankee shirt.
Oh, yeah? You're a Yankee fan?
I grew up in New York. I love it.
Where?
Queens, second floor.
Okay. I grew up in Staten Island, but I got to tell you, I think I'm at the point. This year, I officially quit baseball. And once Derek Jeter left, it kind of all went downhill for me.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
Aaron
Judge, Yankee fan. Yeah.
Aaron Judge, and he's the same quality.
Right,
of,
he's the last. He's the last hope to keep me glued in.
Okay, I'll talk to him.
Yeah,
we got to keep him. We got to keep him.
Have you ever, and be honest, have you ever listened to the station? Like, we never know who listens with you being in Sarasota, but Stephen King wrote about us in a book, mentioned the station by name, and the character was listening to the station, and we're like, holy cow.
Well, I will. I
That's a no. It's a big fact.
Yeah.
No.
It's a big fact. No.
I
no, but there's nothing else I listen to. Mm-hmm. In other words, I
never heard your podcast, so I'm not mad at you.
No. But I'm saying, I'm trying to think, what age did I stop listening to radio? Then with my daughter, then you wind up listening to whatever
right. Trust me, I know that.
The radio.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now she's an adult. That's true, because what I listen to, I'm very political, so I listen to political radio, MSNBC, stuff like that, CNN.
Yeah, that's an idea. I'm constantly watching the news.
And sports.
I don't even care about sports anymore. I'm just constantly watching the news. I feel like I'm going to miss something. You got to know everything.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
We have a band, and our band is playing in Sarasota next Friday. I don't know where you hang out when you're there, but we were playing at a old school.
Which one?
This is a place you probably wouldn't be caught dead in. We've never even played there before. It's called the 5 o'clock Club, but evidently it's a legendary place for live music.
Oh, yeah.
So we're playing out there next Friday, but we played the
game. Yeah, I get
Club
nervous when you say I won't be caught dead there. I'm 75.
You might actually be dead there.
I could be caught dead any place.
Listen, nothing would make us feel better than if you died at one of our gigs.
No, we bought a plot.
You're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, my wife and I, we bought a plot, and it's in the Chicago area, you know, near where our daughter lives. Because, you know, in the end, the people that are going to visit are going to be your own kids and grandkids. Yeah. So we are close to them. Well, literally last weekend, we're driving to the shopping mall with my grandson in the back. He's 10 years old. And he says, "Hey, Opa, there's your new home."
Oh, my God. Man.
He knows he's getting some of that money.
Oh,
he knows it's coming.
I'll tell you a money story. He's 10 years old and he's 5'2". He's very tall and very athletic.
Right.
So I told him when he hit 5 feet tall, I was going to give him $100, which I did.
Uh-huh.
So I now said, when you're 6 feet tall, I'll give you $500. And all of a sudden, he almost tears up. He says, "You're not going to be around then." So we've worked out a deal. I promised him that when they lay me out in my suit, I'm going to take 5 crisp $100 bills and put it in my front right pocket. So now he's thinking, he says, "You know how they lay you out and everybody comes and, you know, they come up to the coffin and they kind of touch you and they, you know, weep a little bit and then they move on." He says, "Here's how I'm going to do it, Opa." I'm going to come up to you and kind of put my arms around you and everyone will think I'm crying. And then he's feeling around my front pocket for the $500.
Wow.
I said, "How do you spell Opa?" He says, "ATM." No,
Does he know that you're cool and he's got a cool grandfather?
Well, cool is another word, but he knows of my television stuff because the kids in the school, when he was in second grade, for example, all have older siblings. So, and then when we walk down the street, it's Jerry. He's just the greatest kid in the world. I mean, he's just wonderful.
Yeah.
We love each other. Yeah.
That's good. Good. I have to tell you, it's been a pleasure to have you in here. Thank you. Go meet Jerry Springer today.
Yeah. You're fun.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn the radio on.
Oh, stop it.
I want to hear your show.
Yeah. I used to have this idea for a TV show. It's too late now because he's kind of, Regis used to call the show. And we had mutual friends.
Yeah.
And I had met him a couple of times. And when he'd come to town, he used to call the show. And when he retired, we were the only interview he did. He called us the next day. And he's like, "Cowhead." Or they used to call me Cowhead. He goes, "Cowhead, 60 Minutes is calling me. And you're the only one I'm calling." And I thought, you should move down here and we should do a show together where now we just hang out. The show's called Me and Regis and we just take you to do things. Like, you just live my life now.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a good idea for me and you, Jerry, when you retire. Just me and Jerry. And I'm going to take you through the second part of your life.
If this judge show doesn't work, I'm going to need another job. Yeah.
Come to me. I'm full ideas.
No, I'll show you where they're going to bury me.
I'd love to see it.
Oh, here's what I want to do. Do you have one more minute?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what my thought is. You know, I'll have the gravestone, and then in front of the gravestone, there is a rectangle where they put where you go in. Around three sides of that rectangle facing the headstone, I want to have 4 rows of bleachers. And on top of the gravestone, I want a big TV screen, a big screen where 24/7 they're looping the show of 5,000 shows.
Oh, man.
When I was a kid or younger, a teenager, you know, on Friday nights, you would go to the local cemetery and kind of hang out there. It's nice and dark and everything.
That was your
parking
lot. And
this would be entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So people would come to the cemetery. They'd sit on the bleachers. And they'd watch my show, and my headstone would simply say, "I won't be right back."
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
I want to do it.
You will live on forever.
Yeah. This is my eternal flame.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Kennedy, eternal flame. I'm going to have the eternal show.
Yes.
Why
that
not?
That is brilliant. That is brilliant. Put that in some sort of will. Make sure. Tell the kid, make it $5,000 if you
get the bleachers. Yeah, and I'll let him do the opening act.
Yeah.
Richard, that's a great idea. Yeah. Richard will go there and go, "Hello there, everybody. Welcome to our show. We're going to have Opa coming up in just a minute. But first, funny thing happened to me on the way to the cemetery."
Headstone, TV, bleachers, and then a statue.
You can picture it. Yes. Yeah, with Steve. Yes.
That'd be wonderful.
Oh, man.
It would be the most visited gravesite since Elvis. That's the way to go.
We got to do it. I'm so excited.
All right, I changed the name of the show. It's called Planning Jerry's Death.
Yeah.
And I'll help you. I'll follow.
Oh, you'll have a lot of suggestions.
Yeah. Go meet Jerry Springer today, 4202 West Bruce Street. And, of course, you go from 11 to 1, you can watch the Jerry Springer Show weekdays on CW 44 from 2 to 4 p.m.